While this is loading, I'd like to introduce Dr. Jerry Hatfield. He's a USDA ARS at the National Laboratory for Ag and the Environment, and he's the director of the Midwest Climate Hub in Ames, Iowa, and he has lots of experience. He's worked with the IPCC in the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize, vice past president of ASA, and recent recipient of the ARS Hall of Fame. So congratulations to Jerry, and let's welcome him this morning.
I'll resist the opportunity to tell you the reality of climate hubs after Charlie gave you that talk, since I do direct the Midwest Climate Hub. But I do want to spend this time talking about my more interesting topic, and that's G by E by M, genetics by environment by management. And let me tell you that some people say, well, why do you split management out? We were perfectly happy with G by E, did that for a number of years. But in reality, when you start splitting management into that, and if you look at the slides that Charlie put up there in terms of how producers view this, management becomes the point in which they have a major stake in the game. And I'll weave you through that story as we go along with this. And so we're really looking at this, G by E by M, as an interactive approach to climate adaptation. How do we adapt to the climate? How do we look at this piece of the puzzle from an entirely different perspective? My cohort in crime in this is Charlie. We've spent a lot of time working on this. We've been back and forth on a number of different issues on this, and it's really about philosophy, but it's also about reality. It is reality in terms of how do we take and go forward into an approach that allows us to really deliver information to producers that have an impact on them, but more importantly, how do we cycle it back so that we can begin to look at the requirements of genetics in the future? What sort of management practices do we need to have to support those? A number of different things. So when we look at climate change, we have abiotic effects, we have biotic effects. These weeds, insects, and pathogens are really important. In working with especially crop and the perennial crop producers across the Midwest, one of their major issues is insects and diseases induced by extreme rainfall events within 2 weeks after planting. And there are bacterial diseases, so they don't have any control measures. So how do we begin to look at that and, you know, do you guess on rainfall? A number of different things, a number of the pieces. So this whole climate change and climate variability imposes new types of challenges that we haven't really begun to think about. The variability in the weather, Saucy put it up in terms of California, and that with the drought that's been occurring out here, but if you look across the United States, you look across the world, is that the extreme climate variability that we're going to endure not only in the next 5 years, but 10 and 20, are really going to pose some challenges to agriculture. And so climate really becomes more of a decision-making criteria because of this greater degree of uncertainty. How do we bring those things together? And all agricultural systems are going to be affected in some degree, either by yield reductions, production cost increase, just in the, just use the disease example again, requirements for increased amount of application of material to control diseases or insects in there. In the near term, we have some mixed effects. Longer term, we have some greater projections in terms of what's going to occur out there. At the foundation of all of this is still this soil, water, and ecosystem research. We are going to have to figure out how to protect our soil resource. We see continued erosion in there. We may have, and we've been working with NRCS to see if the current guidelines for conservation practices are really adequate to provide the protection to the natural resources that we need going in to the next 10 or 20 years. And these extreme events are impacting it quite dramatically. One of the climate signals that's out there is that we're going to have increasing intensity of precipitation. It's not unusual for us to see 5-6 inch rainfalls in a 24-hour period that lead to all sorts of different issues in this whole thing, plus all the other changes that are going on. So all of this climate change background is the environmental piece of this puzzle that really becomes a wild card in this whole thing. It is not your father's environment that we're going to experience. And that's what producers need to realize as they go forward. What they've done in the past is not going to be adequate. It's what we go in the future. If you just look at projections, the 2040 projection in terms of temperatures out there, you know, increasing temperatures that are within that 2 to 3 degree centigrade change, and you think about this, that's only 25 years from now when we start talking about this. Moving into the 2080s, we're talking about 5 degrees centigrade increases. You look at the precipitation changes in seasonality of precipitation. More spring precipitation across the Midwest, less summer precipitation, says that what we really have in the past in terms of looking at practices may not be sufficient to be able to provide that water that it takes to grow that crop adequately. And so a lot of producers across the Midwest are really talking about irrigation. How do you begin to supply irrigation into high-value crops that are out there? The piece that you need to understand is that climate determines where we grow a crop, weather determines how much we produce. And so that you can separate that time scale in a very different way in terms of what we look at. And just to give you two examples on this, here is the climate piece of it, and if you look at the distribution of corn, soybeans, and wheat across the Midwest and across the United States, very rapid expansion of corn and soybean production in the North Dakota and South Dakota in the last 10 years because of a slight change in climate. More summer precipitation, a little longer growing season, a little warmer temperatures, and then it didn't hurt that the high price of corn, high price of soybeans, demand for corn just drove this all in. And so it's not a matter of when agriculture is going to adapt to climate, it's a matter of how they adapt, because we see this changing all the time. There are counties in North Dakota and South Dakota that are as intense in corn and soybeans as any county in Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. So we see this shift occurring, and if you look at the map from 2000 in the same thing, you wouldn't have seen near that amount of corn and soybean production. But if you take a look at it from a different standpoint, this is the weather impacts. Look at soybean production, corn production, wheat production. All this variation among the years is really due to the weather that we experience within that growing season. You can see that precipitous drop in corn production in 2012, slight recovery in 2013, and then we'll see more recovery in 2014 if we can get the crop out of the ground in the Midwest because of the high rainfall we have in the Midwest. So these climate factors, as we begin to layer this all together, you can think about the inputs of temperature, precipitation, solar radiation, carbon dioxide, and you'll hear a lot about those specific aspects as we go through the day. But they have direct impacts. They have direct impacts on growth, phenology, and yield in there. But the piece that often gets overlooked is the indirect impacts of those. Those same factors are affecting insect, disease, and weed populations. Carbon dioxide is greatly influencing weeds in terms of their growth habitats. These temperature changes influence insects in terms of number of life cycles as well as overwintering. The changes in precipitation patterns, particularly in the spring, as well as sometimes in the summer, are changing the whole disease population, dynamics of all of this. And then we have the soil as its underlying resource for nutrients and water. So when you really begin to look at this G by E by M complex, it really is how do we begin to wrap this type of approach around this understanding. I'm just going to go through some examples of G by E by M in all of this, and I'll start with an experiment we did in the Rhizotron where we could control temperature and we could control the soil water content. And all we did in that environment is that we basically exposed one chamber to what temperatures would be in Iowa in 2080, with basically a 4-degree centigrade change, and the other one is the normal Ames environment today. And the chamber and the blocks were all kept at a well water condition to meet atmospheric demand. And between those two chambers, the relative humidity was set so they had the same vapor pressure deficit. So we didn't confuse it by having a different atmospheric demand in all of this. This is Tice and Sarratha supplied the seed from Monsanto on this. And all of this is just total collars. You can see the open circles are the warm environment, and closed circles are the normal. See this very rapid rate of growth in the warm environment. Those numbers below there are the yields coming out of that chambers. When you expose that to the high temperature with that first block, it's 2,100 kilograms per hectare, and if it's under the normal, it's 13,000. So major decreases in yield. That middle hybrid is not going to do well under a hot environment. It went to zero yield. And we ran this a second time. You see the same phenology increase. A little bit differences in yield in there because we terminated it just a little bit before black layer, but the results are the same in all of this. What's surprising in all of this is if you look at leaf area, we really don't change the total leaf area in that plant at all, because the exposure to the high temperatures is really not affecting it affects the phenology early in the season, but we're not exposing it to that much above the optimum. It's during the reproductive stage when we really get exposed above the optimum. So we're doing a frequency analysis of that to be able to determine exactly when during the life cycle these plants get exposed to extreme events and what happens in all of this. So all of these things begin to do that. You see the differences between different hybrids out there, so there is a G by E by M interaction. And if we add water influence to this, we really change the whole dynamic. We see the same thing as we look across fields, look across years. This just happens to be the phenological progression. That dash line is growing degree days, and you see three different seasons out there and three different trajectories of growing degree days because plants are going to expose to different environments throughout the whole season. And so you see all of this, and then you see the cumulative precipitation in there. So producers are going to have to understand the dynamics of what happens in all of this. But here's where we really begin to have some opportunities. And that is that if we start looking at this G by E by M, we're going to have to go back and start looking and working much more closely with geneticists in terms of genomics. And all I have in here is an experiment that Kumar and company did looking at different rice scores in terms of genotypic scores and environmental scores to do a scatter plot in there, looking at different vectors and how genotypes are responding out there. We're going to have to work much more closely with the geneticists to be able to understand the dynamics of what's going on in this. We can't park ourselves away from saying, well, the geneticist will develop this perfect hybrid and then we'll start looking at that. We're going to have to become very involved at the onset of this and begin to understand what tools like scatter plots mean in terms of genomics and how that begins to look at the whole dynamics of this. Here's a modeling study that was done that actually has G by E by M as part of this. If you look at that dark gray line at the bottom, that's the management piece that they simulated with the different models. This happens to be just the CSIRO climate change model. The 0, 0, minus, plus 30, minus 30, plus 50, minus 50 are percentage changes in summer and winter temperatures out there. So really they're exposing them to lots of different conditions. The middle gray is the genotype, light gray is the G by E interaction. And so you can begin to see that if you look across this whole aspect and you look across those three different panels out there, different effects of management, different effects of genotypes, and they're interacting differently across years. So we're going to have to really begin to look at this type of an approach in really looking at how do we begin to understand the dynamics of this. And I think there are a lot of potentials in utilizing tools like this if we begin to understand just really how some of these plants begin to respond to this. Another one, this is yield trends and yield gaps across environments. I realize that this is extremely busy, but I just copied the whole picture because what these Wang and Al did is they simulated potential yield for all these different locations. And the reason I put it up here is because of the question in terms of local effects out there, is that the local environments were causing a different response in terms of potential yield. Local environments are causing a response in terms of actual yield, and the trajectories in terms of the yield gaps were different among all these locations. So it really says that that location effect or that environment effect and how it begins to interact with management is going to have to be looked at from an entirely different perspective than the way we've been traditionally looking at it. So GBIEBAN complex is going to push us into asking different questions about the overall response and how do these things begin to interact over time as we go forward so we can populate that decision tree that Charlie wants us to do out there. This whole adaptation to climate change is more than just the physics and more than just the biology. As we put together in terms of the climate impacts report for USDA is that adaptation is a complex social ecological system that is, has social components and it has ecological components. And that's really why we begin to put the M into the GBIEBAN complex, is that there is a sociology to this and there is a management option that producers are going to have to take in this. And these interactions are going to affect the decision making as well as the consequences of those. And they can't be separated with economics and policy and abiotic and biotic effects, the physical and social scales, risk management, a number of different things. But adaptation does offer us the opportunity for minimizing the cost from climate change, but it depends upon farm-level cost, the perception of risk, the access to actionable information, and again, that's the piece that the climate hubs really are targeted towards, is how do we build adaptation strategies in concert with producers. These have to be put in that way. So there is a role for adaptation planning and adaptive management as we go forward. How do we build climate-friendly crops and production systems out there? And the balanced research is this GBIEBAN complex. So can we enhance the rate of crop improvement by a more integrated approach? How can we stabilize production as we go forward? This GBIEBAN, we've got genomics, we've got varieties, we've got cultivars, we've got hybrids out there. The environment is abiotic and biotic effects, and the management is the production practices. So we can achieve it from all these different aspects that are out there. And what I want to do is leave you with these challenges. How do we quantify the response of different genetic material across a range of environments? I think we're going to have to begin to partner with geneticists and saying, how do they really respond to this? How do we develop the transdisciplinary teams to quantify these interactions among GBIEBAN and their components? And then how do we couple the experimental studies with simulation studies to evaluate these interactions under future environments and management options? How do we really take and go forward in saying, how do we get more localized in terms of a particular area or a particular segment of the Corn Belt and saying these are the range of adaptation practices and how do we begin to couple those together? So major challenges that exist, but also major opportunities. But I think we got to really reorient our thinking and how we begin to do this. So with that, thank you.
You have time for maybe one question.
Dave.
So, one reason what we're seeing already in terms of farmer adaptation is diversifying.
Yep.
Not so much selecting a different plant today or different varieties, but a different mix, it might be different growing season lengths. And with stress response, I can see also a mix of stress tolerant and less stress tolerant, particularly in a few years.
Right, and let me just echo that, because it really diversification, and you see a lot of this in terms of production systems, is the diversification out there. So the G really becomes a much broader G than just looking at hybrid selection or length of maturity selection. It really becomes the diversity of the crop rotation as well, and producers are really rapidly doing that. It's risk management for them. So.
Thank you.
Yep.